Good morning. The next case on the call is Jacob v. Frakes. That's case S-22-0544. The Chief Justice is recused and Justice Frydenberg is recused. Judge Serve is sitting by designation. Before we get into the substance of the oral argument, I wanted to do what we might call housekeeping. The court is aware that the appellee has recently filed a suggestion of mootness regarding the mandamus issue. And the court has issued an order that we're going to defer ruling on the mootness. However, we wanted to advise Mr. Jacob that if you want to file a written objection to the mootness on the mandamus issue, you may do so on or before Monday, April the 3rd. The clerks will make a small minute entry to this effect. So with that proposition out of the way, then Mr. Jacob, please proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. There were two issues on this appeal. The mootness claim deals only with the petition for the writ of mandamus. If we're not going to deal with the mootness issue, then I will address the declaratory judgment aspect of the case. The district court below follow the procedure that's set out in the case law on for the petition for writ of mandamus and declaratory judgment, and issued an order to show cause to the appellees to address both of the mandamus request and the declaratory judgment request.
Sir, I'm sorry to interrupt, but where in the alternative writ or the order to show cause issued by the district court judge was there any reference to the declaratory judgment action that was permissively joined with this request for mandamus relief?
It's in the transcript on the order to show cause. I'll read the first statement or the first sentence from it. It says, the relator has filed a petition for writ of mandamus and declaratory judgment. The petition requests a writ of mandamus, ordering the respondent to comply with the Nebraska Statute 84-912.012 by issuing rules and regulations governing petitions for declaratory orders, and cites the case law. And the court hereby orders the respondent to show cause in writing why the writ should not issue. The respondent shall file a written response within 30 days of service of the petition and this order to show cause. By serving the petition, which included both causes of action, the writ of mandamus and the declaratory judgment, the court complied with the Nebraska Statute 25-21.156. The court gave reasonable notice to the adverse party to show cause why, you know, this shouldn't be responded to. So my argument is that they should have responded to the declaratory judgment aspect of this case.
I'm sorry to go a little out of order, but with respect to the mandamus, if you had been successful, what would have been the object of it?
The object would have been to have them issue rules and regulations for the petition for declaratory order procedure. Now, what they brought forward to the court on this mootness, suggestion of mootness, is that these rules and regulations have now been filed with the Secretary of State, but they have not come forward to show the court whether or not inmates were given a notice of a public hearing or an opportunity to meaningfully participate in the hearing process, both of which would render those rules invalid under the case law, Loup City Public Schools versus Nebraska Department of Revenue and Weeks versus the State Board of Education. So in effect, they pulled another subterfuge like they did 7 years ago and have left me back at square one all over again, should the court decide that, you know, this is in fact moot, because the rules that they claim have now been issued are in fact invalid. And so it kind of leaves me in the same boat as I've always been. And the declaratory judgment aspect of this petition is, what I'm trying to get at is the department is trying to implement the standards of the American Correctional Association, which are in conflict with Nebraska state statutes. The declaratory judgment aspect of this petition in this case deals with the authority to take fingerprints from inmates, whereas the Nebraska statutes limits that authority to law enforcement agencies, which the Nebraska Department of Corrections is not authorized to perform those functions. One of the rules that they have come forward and tried to slip in on this November 30th, 2022, there's another one, which is about a refusal to provide a DNA sample, which, you know, this court has decided that Nebraska DNA Sampling Act in Shepherd versus Houston doesn't apply to inmates convicted prior to July of 2015, yet the department now wants to punish inmates who would refuse to provide a DNA sample. So that's another one that's going to be coming your way, because the ACA standard is not in compliance with, or is in conflict with, the Nebraska statutory law and the case law that's been decided by this court. So one way or another, we need to have a procedure to be able to question these rules. And right now, the Department of Corrections isn't giving us the procedure that is supposed to be followed in adopting these rules, and a means of questioning them through this petition for declaratory order procedure.
Mr. Jacob, if we disagree with your theory that the court sort of perfected service for you by issuing the writ, can you point us to anything in the record that would demonstrate you perfected service on Mr. Frakes within 180 days after you filed your pleading?
I included in the transcript the return of service from the court's order to show cause, and it shows that the petition was served upon the department, served on the Attorney General's office on behalf of the Department of Correctional Services.
Was a summons ever requested or served?
The statute, for the declaratory judgment statutes, don't require a summons to be served. It's Nebraska Statute 25-21, 156. The district court can, on reasonable notice, require any adverse party to show cause in response to a request for a declaratory judgment. And that's what I believe the court has done in this case with the order to show cause that they issued. You know, there is a statute which says that no action can be objected to if it also asks for declaratory judgment relief. And by doing combining the two together, the court followed the procedure for the petition for writ of mandamus, and in doing so, also provided the reasonable notice to the adverse party to show cause on the declaratory judgment aspect of this as well.
Sir,
Are there other questions from the bench at this time?
Sir, you have a little bit of time left if you'd like to reserve it for a rebuttal.
I would, yes.
Thank you. Counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, all Your Honors. And Mr. Jacob. May it please the court. My name is Scott Strauss. I'm an Assistant Attorney General for the state of Nebraska, representing the appellee in this case. So as Mr. Jacob stated, there are really two issues in this case. One concerns the adoption and promulgation of rules and regulations regarding declaratory orders. As you may have seen, as discussed today, on Thursday, March 23rd, I filed a suggestion of mootness on that issue, demonstrating and attaching evidence of such that the department has successfully promulgated, or excuse me, adopted and promulgated regulations as required by 84-912.01. These, I do apologize for the late filing of them. I filed it with the evidence the day after that they were brought to the Secretary of State. That should make that issue moot. As to Mr. Jacobs' remarks about whether or not these regulations are valid or not, that was not the issue of the case or before the court below, as there were no regulations at that time. And forgive me, Your Honors, I do not recall the exact statute, but in the APA in Nebraska, it actually provides that any rule or regulation filed with the Secretary of State is presumed valid. So at this point, there is nothing to question or look at whether or not these rules or regulations are valid. But accordingly, that claim, as relates to the mandamus, is moot. As to the declaratory judgment action, first, I'd like to address Mr. Jacobs' suggestion that the UDJ action was did not have to be go through the normal civil litigation process of filing a precip before summons, serving that summons and the complaint upon the respondent. He cites 25-21, 156, which provides, excuse me, Your Honors, that further relief based on declaratory judgment or decree may be granted whenever necessary and proper. So this provision talks about a declaratory judgment that has already been granted.
Is it post-judgment then?
Exactly, Your Honor. It's post-judgment. That is a much more succinct way of saying it than going through the whole statute. Interestingly, as Mr. Jacob alludes to, that he had a declaratory judgment granted in his favor in 2015, perhaps actually the better way to have brought this action to enforce that would have been through 25-21-156. However, that's not what he did. In fact, he brought a writ of mandamus. Your Honor, I actually missed that until he, in his brief, his reply brief, brought up 25-21-156. But through the normal course, mandamus should only is extraordinary and should only even be issued if there's no other ordinary course of law. Quite frankly, I think 25-2156 would have been the correct method to actually go forward with this. But the Mr. Jacob did not seek injunctive relief or further relief, post-judgment relief from that 2015 case, 325-21-156. Now, even if he, although he alludes to, or excuse me, he wrote that he was also bringing a declaratory judgment action under 25.11149 concerning the this issue for fingerprinting, that is a completely separate issue. 25-21-156 does not substitute service for that separate UDJA claim. And in fact, at every point in this case, the respondent noted that when he was responding to the motion to show, or excuse me, the order to show cause on the writ of mandamus, was explicitly not responding to that aspect, excuse me, the UDJA aspect of things, because it was not in fact served. If you also look in the supplemental transcript that was filed in this case, you can, it's evident that no grace fee for summons was ever even requested. This was after Mr. Jake was put on notice on several occasions, one during the response to the order to show cause, and two during the hearing when these issues were discussed and the respondent specifically said that he had not been served for that UDJA action. Accordingly, after the 180 days had passed since he had filed the initial action, by operation of law 25217, that UDJ action has, by operation of law, been dismissed. Because the court, the lower court, didn't have jurisdiction over the UDJ claim after that had been dismissed, I believe on May 9th of 2022, that also means that this court doesn't have any jurisdiction over that issue. Of course, the court can determine whether or not it has jurisdiction over that issue by reviewing the lower court's determination of whether or not it had jurisdiction.
The premise of your argument is on this claim, on this issue, is that the declaratory judgment relief sought by the appellant was by means of an action and not a proceeding, correct?
Yes, Your Honor. An action brought under the Uniform Declaratory Judgment Action, as I believe in the last page of his initial initiating document, which he referred to as a motion for writ of mandamus and declaratory judgment with affidavit, on page 4 of the transcript, at the bottom of the page on letter B, he specifically requests, pursuant to Nebraska Revised Statute 25-21-149, et sequitur. To me, that means he's asking or seeking to initiate a action for a declaratory judgment.
What do we make of the language in 25-21-149 that says no action or proceeding shall be open to objection on the ground that a declaratory judgment or decree is prayed for?
Well, Your Honor, I don't think that an objection has been made with respect to this UDJA action.
My question, maybe yes. I didn't focus it very well. That statute seems to suggest that declaratory judgments can be raised either by action or by proceeding. Is that right?
I believe, Your Honor, in the context for post-judgment relief under 25-21-156 to get relief under a previous action, I believe that would be considered more of a proceeding, that action, that relief could be granted, or the declaratory judgment could be pursued. I'm sorry, Your Honor, I feel like I'm not quite understanding your question.
Is mandamus an action or a proceeding?
It is an action at law, Your Honor.
Okay. All right.
We've said it's an action at law that rests on equitable principles.
Yes.
What does that mean?
of course, Your Honor. mandamus being an action at law, we have a number of case law saying that this is an action at law. Its purpose is to impose a clear duty of an official to execute a ministerial duty. That is ministerial nature, I would agree. Equitable nature. I don't believe you could really describe it as mixed, just because throughout the case law, throughout this time, it has been described as an action of law. And I'm not aware of it being described as an equitable manner, or excuse me, an equitable action, but I have not specifically looked into that issue.
What impact does it have on this appeal that Mr. Frakes is no longer the director of the Department of Correctional Services, and he is the only named respondent in this action?
Sure, Your Honor. I thought quite some time about this. In the federal court, federal rules of evidence, they have a specific provision, 25 subsection
for successor officials.
For successor officials. Nebraska does not actually have a similar statute. The closest we have is 25-3322. Pardon me, if may I continue?
Please.
Thank you.
Finish the thought. Thank you.
A few years ago, the court in Huff v. Brown sort of addressed this issue. It was a mandamus case, it was a public records case, where the court found that, a sheriff that was initially named in the mandamus action for public records was either elected out of office or there was a new sheriff. And the court decided that the new sheriff could be substituted in because the court found that that was being directed towards the sheriff's office.
There was a motion to substitute the party, though.
Yes, Your Honor, there was. I believe in that case by the relator in that case. Here we haven't had that. And I don't.
What legal effect does that have, if any?
Well, Your Honor, it could mean that that there can't be any more relief in any event, and until and unless Mr. Jacob would file a motion to substitute parties. Though I honestly, I don't think it's clear in our case law.
At this time, at this level, what effect would it have before us?
Your Honor, I think because there hasn't been a motion to substitute parties, that there really wouldn't be any relief that could be granted against Director Frakes.
This court know that Mr. Frakes no longer is in that position at this level, at this time, on this record?
Sure, Your Honor. This record does not reflect that. The court, I suppose, could take judicial notice of such.
Didn't your briefing mention it?
Yes, Your Honor, it did.
Described him as the former.
Yes, it did, Your Honor. And I don't know if that's enough in the record. However, we absolutely acknowledge that he is now the former director.
Any other questions?
No. Thank you very much. You're excused. We went a little bit long here. Does Mr. Jacob have some time initially remaining?
Yes, he has 1 minute and 20 seconds.
Okay, so would you add 1.5 minutes to that, please? So that gets us to?
That should put us at 3 minutes and 50 seconds.
Thank you. I'm not sure.
2 minutes. It's 2 minutes. There you go.
Okay, roughly 3 minutes, all right? Are you all right with that from the state's position?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, 3 minutes, sir, Mr. James. Thank you.
First, I would address that the action was against Director Frakes at the time. He was in his official capacity, which, as I understand it, is a suit against the position, the office, not so much the officer, so that any order that would come out would apply to the officer who is the acting director of the Department of Corrections. I don't see that affects any part of this. The problem that I see is, particularly with the mootness aspect, is that this whole case has now been would be set back to square zero, just as it was 7 years ago, because through this subterfuge on the part of the appellees of coming to the court and saying, oh, well, we've taken care of this. We have these rules in place. When in fact, the evidence that's in front of the court doesn't show that the rules are in fact valid. The appellee should have brought the Secretary of State's docket of pending procedures from that's required under the statute 84-906.042B to show that there had been a public hearing on it. My position is, and I will respond here as you've given me my objections to this mootness to April 3rd, to show that there was never any notice of a public hearing given to inmates. And as far as we know, there was never any public hearing actually held on it, which means that these rules are absolutely invalid. And that, as I say, puts me right back at square zero a second time after 7 years. So I guess that's about all I have to say is that, you know, this is like Groundhog Day, but we just keep doing this over and over again. And the state keeps coming up with an excuse to be able to say, well, start over again. When in fact, the statute's quite plain that the agency is supposed to have adopted these rules years ago. So thank you.
Thank you. Your remarks have concluded. Is that correct, Mr. Jay?
Yes.
Thank you very much. Thank you. You're both excused. Thank you very much. You're excused, yeah. That concludes arguments this morning. Court's adjourned.